even they sometimes get poisoned or caught in traps, but little boys sometimes get killed too. Little boys can be run over by motor cars or they can die of some awful illness. Little boys have to go to school. Mice don't. Mice don't have to pass exams. Mice don't have to worry about money. Mice, as far as I can see, have only two enemies, humans and cats. My grandmother is a human, but I know for certain that she will always love me, whoever I am. And she never, thank goodness, keeps a cat. When mice grow up, they don't ever have to go to war and fight against other mice. Mice, I felt pretty certain, all like each other. People don't. Yes, I told myself, I don't think it is at all a bad thing to be a mouse. I was wandering around the ballroom floor, thinking about all this, when I spotted another mouse. It was crouching on the floor, holding a piece of bread in its front paws, and nibbling away at it with great gusto. It had to be Bruno. "Hello, Bruno," I said. He glanced up at me for about 2 seconds, then went right on guzzling. "What have you found?" I asked him.
"One of them dropped it," he answered. "It's a fish paste sandwich. Pretty good."
He too spoke with a perfectly normal voice. One would have expected that a mouse, if it was going to talk at all, would do so with the smallest and squeakiest voice you could imagine. It was terrifically funny to hear the voice of the rather loud-mouthed Bruno coming out of that tiny mouse's throat. "Listen, Bruno," I said, "now that we are both mice, I think we ought to start thinking a bit about the future." He stopped eating and stared at me with small black eyes.
"What do you mean, we?" he said. "The fact that you're a mouse has nothing to do with me."
"But you're a mouse too, Bruno."
"Don't be a fool," he said. "I'm not a mouse."
"I'm afraid you are, Bruno."
"I most certainly am not," he shouted. "Why are you insulting me? I haven't been rude to you. Why do you call me a mouse?"
"Don't you know what's happened to you?" I said.
"What on earth are you talking about?" Bruno said.
"I have to inform you," I said, "that not very long ago, the witches turned you into a mouse. Then they did it to me."
"You're lying," he cried. "I'm not a mouse."
"If you hadn't been so busy guzzling that sandwich," I said, "you would have noticed your hairy paws. Take a look at them." Bruno looked down at his paws. He jumped.
"Good grief," he cried. "I am a mouse. You wait till my father hears about this."
"He may think it's an improvement," I said.
"I don't want to be a mouse," Bruno shouted, jumping up and down. "I refuse to be a mouse. I'm Bruno Jenkins."
"There are worse things than being a mouse," I said. "You can live in a hole."
"I don't want to live in a hole," Bruno shouted.
"And you can creep into the larder at night," I said, "and nibble through all the packets of raisins and cornflakes and chocolate biscuits and everything else you can find. You can stay there all night, eating yourself silly. That's what mice do."
"Oh, that's a thought," Bruno said, perking up a bit. "But how am I going to open the door of the fridge to get at the cold chicken and all the leftovers? That's something I do every evening at home."
"Maybe your rich father will get you a special little mouse fridge all to yourself," I said. "One that you can open."
"You say a witch did this to me," Bruno said. "Which witch?"
"The one who gave you the chocolate bar in the hotel lobby yesterday," I told him. "Don't you remember?"
"The filthy old cow," he shouted. "I'll get her for this. Where is she? Who is she?"
"Forget it," I said. "You don't have a hope. Your biggest problem at the moment is your parents. How are they going to take this? Will they treat you with sympathy and kindness?" Bruno considered this for a moment.
"I think," he said, "that my father is going to be a bit put out."
"And your mother?"
"She's terrified of mice," Bruno said.
"Then you've got a problem, haven't you?"
"Why only me?" he said. "What about you?"
"My grandmother will understand perfectly," I said. "She knows all about witches." Bruno took another bite of his sandwich.
"What do you suggest?" he said.
I suggest we both go first of all and consult my grandmother, I said. She'll know exactly what to do.
I moved towards the doors, which were standing open. Bruno, still grasping part of the sandwich in one paw, followed after me.
When we get out into the corridor, I said, we're going to run like mad. Stick close to the wall all the way and follow me. Do not talk and do not let anyone see you. Don't forget that just about anyone who catches sight of you will try to kill you. I snatched the sandwich out of his paw and threw it away. Here goes, I said. Keep behind me.
Hello, Grandmama. As soon as I was out of the ballroom, I took off like a flash. I streaked down the corridor, went through the lounge and the reading room and the library and the drawing room, and came to the stairs. Up the stairs I went, jumping quite easily from one to the other, keeping well in against the wall all the time.
Are you with me, Bruno? I whispered. Right here, he said.
My grandmother's room and my own were on the fifth floor. It was quite a climb, but we made it without meeting a single person on the way because everyone was using the lift. On the fifth floor, I raced along the corridor to the door of my grandmother's room. A pair of her shoes were standing outside the door to be cleaned. Bruno was alongside me.
What do we do now? He said.
Suddenly, I caught sight of a chambermaid coming along the corridor towards us. I saw at once that she was the one who had reported me to the manager for keeping white mice. Not, therefore, the sort of person I wanted to meet in my present condition.
Quick, I said to Bruno, hide in one of those shoes.
I hopped into one shoe, and Bruno hopped into the other. I waited for the maid to walk past us. She didn't. When she came to the shoes, she bent down and picked them up. In doing this, she put her hand right inside the one I was hiding in. When one of her fingers touched me, I bit it. It was a silly thing to do, but I did it instinctively, without thinking. The maid let out a scream that must have been heard by ships far out in the English Channel, and she dropped the shoes and ran like the wind down the corridor. My grandmother's door opened.
What on earth is going on out here? She said.
I darted between her legs into her room, and Bruno followed me.
Close the door, Grandmama, I cried. Please hurry!
She looked around and saw two small brown mice on the carpet.
Please close it, I said.
And this time, she actually saw me talking and recognized my voice. She froze and became absolutely motionless. Every part of her body, her fingers and hands and arms and head, became suddenly as stiff as a marble statue. Her face turned even paler than marble, and her eyes were stretched so wide I could see the whites all around them. Then she started to tremble. I thought she was going to faint and fall over.
"Please close the door quickly, Grandmama," I said. "That awful maid might come in."
She somehow managed to gather herself together enough to close the door. She leaned against it, staring down at me, white-faced and shaking all over. I saw tears beginning to come out of her eyes and go dribbling down her cheeks.
"Don't cry, Grandmama," I said. "Things could be a lot worse. I did get away from them. I'm still alive. So is Bruno."
Very slowly, she bent down and picked me up with one hand. Then she picked Bruno up with the other hand and put us both on the table. There was a bowl of bananas in the center of the table, and Bruno jumped straight into it and began tearing away with his teeth at one of the banana skins to get at the fruit inside. My grandmother grasped the arm of her chair to steady herself, but her eyes never left me. "Sit down, dear Grandmama," I said. She collapsed into her chair.
"Oh, my darling," she murmured,
and now the tears were really streaming down her cheeks.
"Oh, my poor, sweet darling, what have they done to you?"
"I know what they've done, Grandmama, and I know what I am, but the funny thing is that I don't honestly feel especially bad about it. I don't even feel angry. In fact, I feel rather good. I know I'm not a boy any longer, and I never will be again, but I'll be quite all right as long as there's always you to look after me." I was not just trying to console her. I was being absolutely honest about the way I felt. You may think it odd that I wasn't weeping myself. It was odd. I simply can't explain it.
Of course I look after you, my grandmother murmured. Who is the other one?
That was a boy called Bruno Jenkins, I told her. They got him first. My grandmother took a new long black cigar out of a case in her handbag and put it in her mouth. Then she got out a box of matches. She struck a match, but her fingers were shaking so much that the flame kept missing the end of the cigar. When she got it lit at last, she took a long pull and sucked in the smoke. That seemed to calm her down a bit. "Where did it happen?" she whispered. "Where is the witch now? Is she in the hotel?" "Grandmama," I said, "it wasn't just one. It was hundreds. They're all over the place. They're right here in the hotel this very moment." She leaned forward and stared at me.
You don't mean to tell me they're holding the annual meeting right here in the hotel?
They've held it, Grandmama. It's finished. I heard it all. And all of them, including the Grand High Witch herself, are downstairs now. They're pretending they're the Royal Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children. They're all having tea with the manager.
And they caught you.
They smelt me out, I said.
Dog's droppings, was it? She said, sighing.
I'm afraid so. But it wasn't strong. They very nearly didn't smell me because I hadn't had a bath for ages.
Children should never have baths, my grandmother said. It's a dangerous habit.
I agree, Grandmama.
She paused, sucking at her cigar. Do you really mean to tell me that they are now all downstairs having tea? She said.
I'm certain of it, Grandmama.
There was another pause. I could see the old glint of excitement slowly coming back into my grandmother's eyes. And all of a sudden she sat up very straight in her chair and said sharply, "Tell me everything, right from the beginning, and please hurry." I took a deep breath and began to talk. I told about going to the ballroom and hiding behind the screen to do my mouse training. I told about the notice saying Royal Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children. I told her all about the women coming in and sitting down, and about the small woman who appeared on the stage and took off her mask. But when it came to describing what her face looked like underneath the mask, I simply couldn't find the right words.
"It was horrible, Grandmama," I said. "Oh, it was so horrible. It was like something that was going rotten."
"Go on," my grandmother said. "Don't stop."
Then I told her about all the others taking off their wigs and their gloves and their shoes, and how I saw before me a sea of bald, pimply heads, and how the women's fingers had little claws, and how their feet had no toes. My grandmother had come forward now in her armchair so that she was sitting right on the edge of it. Both her hands were cupped over the gold knob of the stick that she always used when walking, and she was staring at me with eyes as bright as two stars. Then I told her how the Grand High Witch had shot out the fiery white-hot sparks and how they had turned one of the other witches into a puff of smoke.
"I've heard about that," my grandmother cried out excitedly, "but I never quite believed it. You are the first non-witch ever to see it happening. It is the Grand High Witch's most famous punishment. It is known as getting fried, and all the other witches are petrified of having it done to them. I am told that the Grand High Witch makes it a rule to fry at least one witch at each annual meeting. She does it in order to keep the rest of them on their toes."
"But they don't have any toes, Grandmama."
"I know they don't, my darling. But please go on." So then I told my grandmother about the delayed action mouse maker. And when I came to the bit about turning all the children of England into mice, she actually leapt out of her chair shouting, "I knew it! I knew they were brewing up something tremendous!" We've got to stop them, I said. She turned and stared at me. You can't stop witches, she said. Just look at the power that terrible Grand High Witch has in her eyes alone. She could kill any of us at any time with those white-hot sparks of hers. You saw it yourself. Even so, Grandmama, we've still got to stop her from turning all the children of England into mice.
You haven't quite finished, she said. Tell me about Bruno. How did they get him?
So I described how Bruno Jenkins had come in, and how I had actually seen him with my own eyes, being shrunk into a mouse. My grandmother looked at Bruno, who was guzzling away in the bowl of bananas.
Does he ever stop eating? She asked.
Never, I said. Can you explain something to me, Grandmama?
I'll try, she said.
She reached out and lifted me off the table and put me on her lap. Very gently, she began stroking the soft fur along my back.
It felt nice.
What is it you want to ask me, my darling? She said. The thing I don't understand, I said, is how Bruno and I are still able to talk and think just as we did before.
It's quite simple, my grandmother said. All they've done is to shrink you and give you four legs and a furry coat, but they haven't been able to change you into a 100% mouse. You are still yourself in everything except your appearance. You've still got your own mind and your own brain and your own voice, and thank goodness for that.
So, I'm not really an ordinary mouse at all, I said. I'm a sort of mouse person.
Quite right, she said. You are a human in mouse's clothing. You are very special.
We sat there in silence for a few moments while my grandmother went on stroking me very gently with one finger and puffing her cigar with the other hand. The only sound in the room was made by Bruno as he attacked the bananas in the bowl. But I wasn't doing nothing as I lay there on her lap. I was thinking like mad. My brain was whizzing as it had never whizzed before.
Grandmama, I said, I may have a bit of an idea.
Yes, my darling, what is it?
The Grand High Witch told them her room was number 454, right?
Right, she said.
Well, my room is number 554. Mine, 554, is on the fifth floor, so hers, 454, will be on the fourth floor.
That is correct, my grandmother said.
Then don't you think it's possible that room 454 is directly underneath room 554?
That's more than likely, she said. These modern hotels are all built like boxes of bricks.
But what if it is?
Would you please take me out onto my balcony so I can look down, I said. All the rooms in the Hotel Magnificent had small private balconies. My grandmother carried me through into my own bedroom and out onto my balcony. We both peered down to the balcony immediately below.
Now, if that is her room, I said, then I'll bet I could climb down there somehow and get in.
And get caught all over again, my grandmother said. I won't allow it.
At this moment, I said, all the witches are down on the Sunshine Terrace having tea with the manager. The Grand High Witch probably won't be back until 6 o'clock or just before. That's when she's going to dish out supplies of that foul formula to the ancient ones who are too old to climb trees after Gruntle's eggs.
And what if you did manage to get into her room? My grandmother said. What then?
Then I should try to find the place where she keeps her supply of delayed action mouse maker, and if I succeeded, then I would steal one bottle of it and bring it back here.
Could you carry it?
I think so, I said. It's a very small bottle.
I'm frightened of that stuff, my grandmother said. What would you do with it if you did manage to get it?
One bottle is enough for 500 people, I said. That would give each and every witch down there a double dose at least. We could turn them all into mice. My grandmother jumped about an inch in the air.
We were out on my balcony, and there was a drop of about 1,000,000 feet below us, and I very nearly bounced out of her hand over the railings when she jumped. "Be careful with me, Grandmama," I said. "What an idea!" she cried. "It's fantastic! It's tremendous! You're a genius, my darling!" "Wouldn't it be something?" I said. "Wouldn't that really be something? We'd get rid of every witch in England in one swoop," she cried, "and the Grand High Witch into the bargain." "We've got to try it," I said. "Listen," she said, nearly dropping me over the balcony once again in her excitement. "If we brought this off, it would be the greatest triumph in the whole history of witchery." "There's a lot of work to do," I said. "Of course there's a lot of work to do," she said. "Just for a start, supposing you did manage to get hold of one of those bottles, how would you get it into their food?" "We'll work that out later," I said. "Let's try to get the stuff first." "How can we find out for sure if that's her room just below us?"
"We shall check it out immediately," my grandmother cried. "Come along. There's not a second to waste."
Carrying me in one hand, she went bustling out of the bedroom and along the corridor, banging her stick on the carpet with each step she took. We went down the stairs one flight to the fourth floor. The bedrooms on either side of the corridor had their numbers painted on the doors in gold.
"Here it is," my grandmother cried. "Number 454.
She tried the door. It was locked, of course. She looked up and down the long, empty hotel corridor.
"I do believe you're right," she said. "This room is almost certainly directly below yours."
She marched back along the corridor, counting the number of doors from the Grand High Witch's room to the staircase. There were 6. She climbed back up to the 5th floor and repeated the exercise.
"She is directly below you," my grandmother cried out. "Her room is right below yours."
She carried me back into my own bedroom and went out once again onto the balcony.
"That's her balcony down there," she said. "And what's more, the door from her balcony into her bedroom is wide open." "How are you going to climb down?"
"I don't know," I said. Our rooms were in the front of the hotel, and they looked down onto the beach and the sea. Immediately below my balcony, thousands of feet below, I could see a fence of spiked railings. If I fell, I'd be a goner.
"I got it," my grandmother cried.
With me in her hand, she rushed back into her own room and began rummaging in the chest of drawers. She came out with a ball of blue knitting wool. One end of it was attached to some needles and a half-finished sock she had been knitting for me.
"This is perfect," she said. "I should put you in the sock and lower you down onto the Grand High Witch's balcony. But we must hurry. Any moment now that monster will be returning to her room."
The Mouse Burglar. My grandmother hustled me back into my own bedroom and out onto the balcony.
"Are you ready?" she asked. "I'm going to put you in the sock now."
"I hope I can manage this," I said. "I'm only a little mouse."
"You'll manage," she said. "Good luck, my darling."
She popped me into the sock and started lowering me over the balcony. I crouched inside the sock and held my breath. Through the stitches, I could see out quite clearly. Miles below me, the children playing on the beach were the size of beetles. The sock started swinging in the breeze. I looked up and saw my grandmother's head sticking out over the railings of the balcony above.
"You're nearly there," she called out. "Here we go. Gently does it. You're down."
I felt a slight bump.
"In you go," my grandmother was shouting. "Hurry, hurry, hurry. Search the room."
I jumped out of the sock and ran into the Grand High Witch's bedroom. There was the same musty smell about the place that I had noticed in the ballroom. It was the stench of witches. It reminded me of the smell inside the men's public lavatory at our local railway station. As far as I could see, the room was tidy enough. There was no sign anywhere that it was inhabited by anyone but an ordinary person. But then there wouldn't be, would there? No witch would be stupid enough to leave anything suspicious lying around for the hotel maid to see.
Suddenly I saw a frog jumping across the carpet and disappearing under the bed. I jumped myself.
Hurry up,
came my grandmother's voice from somewhere high up outside.
Grab the stuff and get out.
I started skittering around and trying to search the room. This wasn't so easy. I couldn't, for example, open any of the drawers. I couldn't open the doors of the big wardrobe either. I stopped skittering about. I sat in the middle of the floor and had a think. If the Grand High Witch wanted to hide something top secret, where would she put it? Certainly not in any ordinary drawer. Not in the wardrobe either. It was too obvious. I jumped up onto the bed to get a better view of the room.
Hey, I thought, what about under the mattress?
Very carefully, I lowered myself over the edge of the bed and wormed my way underneath the mattress. I had to push forward hard to make any headway, but I kept at it. I couldn't see a thing. I was scrabbling about under the mattress when my head suddenly bumped against something hard inside the mattress above me. I reached up and felt it with my paw. Could it be a little bottle? It was a little bottle. I could trace the shape of it through the cloth of the mattress. And right alongside it, I felt another hard lump, and another, and another. The Grand High Witch must have slit open the mattress and put all the bottles inside, and then sewn it all up again. I began tearing away frantically at the mattress cloth above my head with my teeth. My front teeth were extremely sharp, and it didn't take me long to make a small hole. I climbed into the hole and grabbed a bottle by the neck. I pushed it down through the hole in the mattress and climbed out after it. Walking backwards and dragging the bottle behind me, I managed to reach the edge of the mattress. I rolled the bottle off the bed onto the carpet. It bounced, but it didn't break. I jumped down off the bed. I examined the little bottle. It was identical to the one the Grand High Witch had had in the ballroom. There was a label on this one. Formula 86, it said. Delayed action mouse maker. Then it said, this bottle contains 500 doses. Eureka! I felt tremendously pleased with myself. Three frogs came hopping out from under the bed. They crouched on the carpet, staring at me with large black eyes. I stared back at them. Those huge eyes were the saddest things I had ever seen. It suddenly occurred to me that almost certainly once upon a time they had been children, those frogs, before the Grand High Witch had got hold of them. I stood there clutching the bottle and staring at the frogs. "Who are you?" I asked them. At that exact moment, I heard a key turning in the lock of the door, and the door burst open, and the Grand High Witch swept into the room. The frogs jumped underneath the bed again in one quick hop. I darted after them, still clutching the bottle, and I ran back against the wall and squeezed in behind one of the bedposts. I heard feet walking on the carpet. I peeped round the bedpost. The three frogs were clustered together under the middle of the bed. Frogs cannot hide like mice. They cannot run like mice either. All they can do, poor things, is to hop about rather clumsily. Suddenly, the Grand High Witch's face came into view, peering under the bed. I popped my head back behind the bedpost.
So there you are, my little froggies, I heard her saying. You can stay where you are until I go to bed tonight. Then I shall throw you out of the window, and the seagulls can have you for supper.
Suddenly, very loud and clear, there came the sound of my grandmother's voice through the open balcony door.
Hurry up, my darling, it shouted. Do hurry up. You better come out quickly.
Who is calling?
Snapped the Grand High Witch. I peeped round the bedpost again and saw her walking across the carpet to the balcony door.
Who is this on my balcony? She muttered. Who is it who dares to trespass on my balcony?
She went through the door onto the balcony itself.
"What is this knitting wool hanging down here?"
I heard her saying. "Oh, hello," came my grandmother's voice. "I just dropped my knitting over the balcony by mistake, but it's all right. I've got hold of one end of it. I can pull it up by myself, thank you all the same." I marveled at the coolness of her voice.
"Who were you talking to just now?"
snapped the Grand High Witch. "Who were you telling to hurry up and come out quickly?" "I was talking to my little grandson," I heard my grandmother saying. "He's been in the bathroom for hours, and it's time he came out. He sits in there reading books, and he forgets completely where he is. Do you have any children, my dear?"
"They do not,"
shouted the Grand High Witch, and she came quickly back into the bedroom, slamming the balcony door behind her. I was cooked. My escape route was closed. I was shut up in the room with the Grand High Witch and three terrified frogs. I was just as terrified as the frogs. I was quite sure that if I was spotted, I would be caught and thrown out over the balcony for the seagulls. There came a knock on the bedroom door.
"What is it this time?" shouted the Grand High Witch.
"It is we, Ancient Ones," said a meek voice from behind the door. "It is 6 o'clock, and we have come to collect the bottles that you promised us, oh, your grandness."
I saw her crossing the carpet towards the door. The door was opened, and then I saw a whole lot of feet and shoes beginning to enter the room. They were coming in slowly and hesitantly, as though the owners of those shoes were frightened of entering.
"Coming! Coming!" snapped the Grand High Witch. "Do not stand out there, dithering in the corridor. I don't have all night."
I saw my chance. I jumped out from behind the bedpost and ran like lightning towards the open door. I jumped over several pairs of shoes on the way, and in 3 seconds I was out in the corridor, still clutching the precious bottle to my chest. No one had seen me. There were no shouts of, "Mouse! Mouse!" All I could hear were the voices of the ancient witches burbling their silly sentences about how kind your grandness is, and all the rest of it. I went scampering down the corridor to the stairs and up one flight. I went to the 5th floor and then along the corridor again until I came to the door of my own bedroom. Thank goodness there was no one in sight. Using the bottom of the little bottle, I began tap, tap, tapping on the door. Tap, 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 I went. Tap, tap, tap. Tap, tap, tap. Would my grandmother hear me? I thought that she must. The bottle made quite a loud tap each time it struck. Tap, tap, tap. Tap, tap, tap. Just so long as nobody came along the corridor. But the door didn't open. I decided to take a risk. "Grandmama!" I shouted as loudly as I possibly could. "Grandmama! It's me! Let me in!" I heard her feet coming across the carpet and the door opened. I went in like an arrow. "I've done it!" I cried, jumping up and down. "I've got it, Grandmama! Look, here it is! I've got a whole bottle of it!" She closed the door. She bent down and picked me up and hugged me. "Oh, my darling!" she cried. "Thank heavens you're safe!" She took the little bottle from me and read the label aloud. "Formula 86 Delayed Action Mouse Maker," she read. "This bottle contains 500 doses. You brilliant darling boy! You're a wonder! You're a marvel! How on earth did you get out of her room?" "I nipped out when the ancient witches were coming in," I told her. "It was all a bit hairy, Grandmama. I wouldn't want to do it again."
"I saw her too," my grandmother said.
"I know you did, Grandmama. I heard you talking to each other. Didn't you think she was absolutely foul?"
"She's a murderer," my grandmother said. "She's the most evil woman in the entire world."
"Did you see her mask?" I asked. "It's amazing," my grandmother said. "It looks just like a real face." Even though I knew it was a mask, I still couldn't tell.
"Oh, my darling,"
she cried, giving me a hug. I thought I'd never see you again. I'm so happy you got away.
Mr. and Mrs. Jenkins meet Bruno. My grandmother carried me back into her own bedroom and put me on the table. She set the precious bottle down beside me. "What time are those witches having supper in the dining room?" she asked. 8 o'clock, I said. She looked at her watch. "It is now 6:10, she said. "We've got until 8 o'clock to work out our next move." Suddenly her eye fell upon Bruno. He was still in the banana bowl on the table. He had eaten 3 bananas and was now attacking a fourth. He had become immensely fat. "That's quite enough," my grandmother said, lifting him out of the bowl and putting him on the tabletop. "I think it's time we returned this little fellow to the bosom of his family. Don't you agree, Bruno?" Bruno scowled at her. I had never seen a mouse scowl before, but he managed it.
"My parents let me eat as much as I want," he said. "I'd rather be with them than with you."
"Of course you would," my grandmother said. "Do you know where your parents might be at this moment?"
"They were in the lounge not long ago," I said. "I saw them sitting there as we dashed through on our way up here."
"Right," my grandmother said. "Let's go and see if they're still there. Do you want to come along?" she added, looking at me. "Yes, please," I said. "I should put you both in my handbag," she said. "Keep quiet and stay out of sight. If you must peep out now and again, don't show more than your nose." Her handbag was a large, bulgy black leather affair with a tortoiseshell clasp. She picked up Bruno and me and popped us into it. "I shall leave the clasp undone," she said, "but be sure to keep out of sight." I had no intention of keeping out of sight. I wanted to see everything. I seated myself in a little side pocket inside the bag near the clasp, and from there I was able to poke my head out whenever I wanted to.
"Hey!" Bruno called out. "Give me the rest of that banana I was eating."
"Oh, all right," my grandmother said. "Anything to keep you quiet." She dropped the half-eaten banana into the bag, then slung the bag over her arm and marched out of the room and went thumping along the corridor with her walking stick. We went down in the lift to the ground floor and made our way through the reading room to the lounge. And there, sure enough, sat Mr. and Mrs. Jenkins in a couple of armchairs with a low round glass-covered table between them. There were several other groups in there as well, but the Jenkinses were the only couple sitting alone. Mr. Jenkins was reading a newspaper. Mrs. Jenkins was knitting something large and mustard-coloured. Only my nose and eyes were above the clasp of my grandmother's handbag, but I had a super view. I could see everything. My grandmother, dressed in black lace, went thumping across the floor of the lounge and halted in front of the Jenkins's table.
"Are you Mr. and Mrs. Jenkins?" she asked.
Mr. Jenkins looked at her over the top of his newspaper and frowned.
"Yes," he said, "I'm Mr. Jenkins. What can I do for you, madam?"
"I'm afraid I have some rather alarming news for you," she said. "It's about your son, Bruno."
"What about Bruno?" Mr. Jenkins said.
Mrs. Jenkins looked up but went on knitting.
"What's the little blighter been up to now?" Mr. Jenkins asked. "Raiding the kitchen, I suppose."
"It's a bit worse than that," my grandmother said. "Do you think we might go somewhere more private while I tell you about it?"
"Private?" Mr. Jenkins said. "Why do we have to be private?"
"This is not an easy thing for me to explain," my grandmother said. "I'd much rather we all went up to your room and sat down before I tell you any more." Mr. Jenkins lowered his paper. Mrs. Jenkins stopped knitting.
"I don't want to go up to my room, madam," Mr. Jenkins said. "I'm quite comfortable here. Thank you very much."
He was a large, coarse man, and he wasn't used to being pushed around by anybody.
"Kindly state your business and then leave us alone," he added.
He spoke as though he was addressing someone who was trying to sell him a vacuum cleaner at the back door.
My poor grandmother, who had been doing her best to be as kind to them as possible, now began to bristle a bit herself.
"We really can't talk in here," she said. "There are too many people. This is a rather delicate and personal matter." "I'll talk where I dashed well want to, madam," Mr. Jenkins said. "Come on now, out with it. If Bruno has broken a window or smashed your spectacles, then I'll pay for the damage, but I'm not budging out of this seat."
One or two other groups in the room were beginning to stare at us now.
"Where is Bruno, anyway?" Mr. Jenkins said. "Tell him to come here and see me."
"He's here already," my grandmother said. "He's in my handbag." She patted the big floppy leather bag with her walking stick.
"What the heck do you mean he's in your handbag?" Mr. Jenkins shouted.
"Are you trying to be funny?"
Mrs. Jenkins said, very prim.
"There's nothing funny about this," my grandmother said. "Your son has suffered a rather unfortunate mishap." "He's always suffering mishaps," Mr. Jenkins said. "He suffers from overeating, and then he suffers from wind. You should hear him after supper. He sounds like a brass band. But a good dose of castor oil soon puts him right again. Where is the little beggar?"
"I've already told you," my grandmother said. "He's in my handbag. But I do think it might be better if he went somewhere private before you meet him in his present state."
"This woman's mad," Mrs. Jenkins said. "Tell her to go away."
"The plain fact is," my grandmother said, "that your son Bruno has been rather drastically altered."
"Altered?" shouted Mr. Jenkins. "What the devil do you mean, altered?"
"Go away," Mrs. Jenkins said. "You're a silly old woman."
"I am trying to tell you as gently as I possibly can that Bruno really is in my handbag," my grandmother said. "My own grandson actually saw them doing it to him." "Saw who doing what to him, for heaven's sake?" shouted Mr. Jenkins. He had a black moustache which jumped up and down when he shouted. "Saw the witches turning him into a mouse," my grandmother said.
"Call the manager, dear," Mrs. Jenkins said to her husband. "Have this mad woman thrown out of the hotel."
At this point, my grandmother's patience came to an end. She fished around in her handbag and found Bruno. She lifted him out and dumped him on the glass-topped table. Mrs. Jenkins took one look at the fat little brown mouse, who was still chewing a bit of banana, and she let out a shriek that rattled the crystals on the chandelier. She sprang out of her chair, yelling,
"It's a mouse! Take it away! I can't stand the things!"
"It's Bruno," my grandmother said.
"You nasty, cheeky old woman," shouted Mr. Jenkins.
He started flapping his newspaper at Bruno, trying to sweep him off the table. My grandmother rushed forward and managed to grab hold of him before he was swept away. Mrs. Jenkins was still screaming her head off, and Mr. Jenkins was towering over us and shouting,
"Get out of here! How dare you frighten my wife like that? Take your filthy mouse away this instant!"
"Help!"
screamed Mrs. Jenkins. Her face had gone the colour of the underside of a fish.
"Well, I did my best," my grandmother said, and with that she turned and sailed out of the room, carrying Bruno with her.
The plan. When we got back to the bedroom, my grandmother took both me and Bruno out of her handbag and put us on the table.
"Why on earth didn't you speak up and tell your father who you were?" she said to Bruno. "'Cause I had my mouth full," Bruno said.
He jumped straight back into the bowl of bananas and went on with his eating.
"What a very disagreeable little boy you are," my grandmother said to him.
"Not boy," I said. "Mouse."
"Quite right, my darling. But we don't have time to worry about him at this moment. We have plans to make. In about an hour and a half's time, all the witches will be going down to supper in the dining room. Right?"
"Right," I said.
"And every one of them has got to be given a dose of mouse maker," she said. "How on earth are we going to do that?"
"Grandmama," I said, "I think you are forgetting that a mouse can go places where human beings can't."
"That's quite right," she said.
but even a mouse can't go creeping around on the tabletop, carrying a bottle and sprinkling mouse maker all over the witch's roast beef without being spotted.
I wasn't thinking of doing it in the dining room, I said.
Then where? She asked.
In the kitchen, I said, while their food is being got ready. My grandmother stared at me.
My darling child, she said slowly, I do believe that turning you into a mouse has doubled your brain power.
A little mouse, I said, can go scuttling round the kitchen among the pots and pans, and if he's very careful, no one will ever see him.
Brilliant! My grandmother cried out. By golly, I think you've got it.
The only thing is, I said, how will I know which food is theirs? I don't want to put it in the wrong saucepan. It would be disastrous if I turned all the other guests into mice by mistake, and especially you, Grandmama.
Then you'll just have to creep into the kitchen and find a good hiding place and wait and listen. Just lie there in some dark cranny, listening and listening to what the cooks are saying, and then, with a bit of luck, somebody's going to give you a clue. Whenever they have a very big party to cook for, the food is always prepared separately.
Right, I said. That's what I'll have to do. I shall wait there and I shall listen, and I shall hope for a bit of luck.
It's going to be very dangerous, my grandmother said. Nobody welcomes a mouse in the kitchen. If they see you, they'll squash you to death.
I won't let them see me, I said.
Don't forget you'll be carrying the bottle, she said, so you won't be nearly so quick and nippy.
I can run quite fast standing up with the bottle in my arms, I said. I did it just now, don't you remember? I came all the way up from the Grand High Witch's room carrying it.
What about unscrewing the top, she said. That might be difficult for you.
Let me try, I said. I took hold of the little bottle, and using both my front paws, I found I was able to unscrew the cap quite easily.
That's great, my grandmother said. You really are a very clever mouse.
She glanced at her watch. At 7:30, she said, I shall go down to the dining room for supper with you in my handbag. I shall then release you under the table together with the precious bottle, and from then on, you'll be on your own.
You'll have to work your way unseen across the dining room to the door that leads into the kitchen. There will be waiters going in and out of that door all the time. You will have to choose the right moment and nip in behind one of them. But for heaven's sake, be sure that you don't get trodden on or squeezed in the door.
I'll try not to, I said.
And whatever happens, you mustn't let them catch you.
Don't go on about it, Grandmama. You're making me nervous.
You're a brave little fellow, she said. I do love you.
What should we do with Bruno? I asked her.
Bruno looked up. I'm coming with you, he said, speaking with his mouth full of banana. I'm not going to miss my supper.
My grandmother considered this for a moment. I'll take you along, she said, if you promise to stay in my bag and keep absolutely silent.
Will you pass food down to me from the table? Bruno asked.
Yes, she said, if you promise to behave yourself.
Would you like something to eat, my darling? She said to me.
No, thank you, I said. I'm too excited to eat. And I've got to keep fit and frisky for the big job ahead.
It's a big job, all right, my grandmother said. You'll never do a bigger one.
In the kitchen.
The time has come, my grandmother said. The great moment has arrived. Are you ready, my darling?
It was exactly 7:30. Bruno was in the bowl finishing that fourth banana.
Hang on, he said, just a few more bites.
No, my grandmother said, we've got to go. She picked him up and held him tight in her hand. She was very tense and nervous. I had never seen her like that before.
I'm going to put you both in my handbag now, she said, but I shall leave the clasp undone.
She popped Bruno into it first. I waited, clutching the little bottle to my chest.
Now you, she said.
She picked me up and gave me a kiss on the nose.
Good luck, my darling.
Oh, by the way, you do realize you've got a tail, don't you?
What?
I said.
A tail? A long, curly tail?
I must say that never occurred to me, I said. Good gracious me, so I have. I can see it now. I can actually move it.
It is rather grand, isn't it?
I mention it only because it might come in useful when you're climbing about in the kitchen, my grandmother said. You can curl it around, and you can hook it onto things, and you can swing from it, and lower yourself to the ground from high places.
I wish I'd known this before, I said. I could have practiced using it.
Too late now, my grandmother said. We've got to go. She popped me into her handbag with Bruno, and at once I took up my usual perch in the small side pocket so that I could poke my head out and see what was going on. My grandmother picked up her walking stick, and out she went into the corridor to the lift. She pressed the button, and the lift came up, and she got in. There was no one in there with us. Listen, she said, I won't be able to talk to you much once we're in the dining room. If I do, people will think I'm dotty and talking to myself.
The lift reached the ground floor and stopped with a jerk. My grandmother walked out of it and crossed the lobby of the hotel and entered the dining room. It was a huge room with gold decorations on the ceiling and big mirrors around the walls. The regular guests always had their tables reserved for them, and most of them were already in their places and starting to eat their suppers. Waiters were buzzing about all over the place, carrying plates and dishes. Our table was a small one beside the right-hand wall, about halfway down the room. My grandmother made her way to it and sat down. Peeping out of the handbag, I could see in the very centre of the room two long tables that were not yet occupied. Each of them carried a notice, fixed onto a sort of silver stick, and the notices said, "Reserved for members of the RSPCC." My grandmother looked towards the long tables but said nothing. She unfolded her napkin and spread it over the handbag on her lap. Her hand slid under the napkin and took hold of me gently. With the napkin covering me, she lifted me up close to her face and whispered, "I am about to put you on the floor under the table. The tablecloth reaches almost to the ground, so no one will see you. Have you got hold of the bottle?" "Yes," I whispered back. "I'm ready, Grandmama." Just then, a waiter in a black suit came and stood by our table. I could see his legs from under the napkin, and as soon as I heard his voice, I knew who he was. His name was William. "Good evening, madam," he said to my grandmother. "Where is the little gentleman tonight?" "He's not feeling very well," my grandmother said. "He's staying in his room."
"I'm sorry to hear that," William said. "Today there is green pea soup to start with, and for the main course you have a choice of either grilled fillet of sole or roast lamb."
"Pea soup and lamb for me, please," my grandmother said. "But don't hurry it, William. I'm in no rush tonight. In fact, you can bring me a glass of dry sherry first."
"Of course, madam," William said, and he went away.
My grandmother pretended she had dropped something, and as she bent down, she slid me out from under the napkin onto the floor under the table. "Go, darling, go," she whispered. Then she straightened up again. I was on my own now. I stood clasping the little bottle. I knew exactly where the door into the kitchen was. I had to go about halfway round the enormous dining room to reach it. "Here goes," I thought, and like a flash, I skittled out from under the table and made for the wall. I had no intention of going across the dining room floor. It was far too risky. My plan was to cling close to the skirting of the wall all the way round